And it's 5, 4, 3. How good do I look? 2. Chris. Yo.
Oh,
yo,
Chris. Oh, sorry. I was just trying to get some sun. Oh, excuse me. All right.
Through the roof.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Tell the Damn Story, the show that celebrates the trials and tribulations, the successes and failures of the writing journey in hopes of making your writing journey easier. I'm Chris Ryan, an award-winning hybrid writer, and he, that guy there, is Alex Simmons, award-winning writer of classic characters like Sherlock Holmes, Scooby-Doo, Archie, Batman, and his own 1930s soldier of fortune, Aaron Blackjack Day. How are you, Alex? How's it going?
I am fine. I am happy. I am thrilled. I like your shirt.
Thank you. It's method. It's a method shirt. We're getting ready for summer this episode.
Right.
And I tell you what, when people find out what we're talking about, they're going to understand that your shirt is method too.
Yes, this is true.
If you're listening to the podcast, ladies and gentlemen, that's fantastic. Give us a, but also come over to YouTube and hit that and subscribe there too, because you get to see not one, but two handsome devils talking about a perennial summer blockbuster. Has been around longer than most of you. However, we're not going to Alex Simmons's time machine. This was my suggestion.
Yeah.
And
Chris's wayback machine.
Yeah. Once I pitched it to him, Alex agreed. And what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about Jaws, not as a summer blockbuster, not as a favorite film, but as a great masterclass in storytelling. Whether you are a screenwriter, a horror genre or thriller genre or any kind of storyteller, we want to show you the three-act structure and a lot of the different secrets that are in Jaws that all go back to the same thing. Serve the story, tell the story, and how to do. If you listen to this episode, you'll watch Jaws with new eyes and new insights. And if you stay around for the end, there's not one, but two tricks in storytelling that they do that is going to make it worth the journey. So stick around. Let's go in the water and see what's for lunch. Hopefully it's Alex, not me. All right, Alex, ballpark guess. How many times, or estimate, how many times do you think you've seen the movie Jaws?
Oh, my goodness. Probably not as many as you, but I would venture over the years at least 10 times.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Me and Glorious have probably seen it over 30 times.
See, there you go. Yeah. There you go.
We've been married a long time.
Yes.
And every summer we find some rainy day, you know, especially if you have one of those summers where every weekend it rains. Yeah, one of those Saturdays is going to be a Jaws Saturday.
And you're talking about the original Jaws now, right?
We're only talking about the OG, the original gangster of the water.
Yeah, right.
That shark. There he is. Yeah,
there
Jaws.
You go.
Right, yeah. The sequels, whatever. But this one,
yeah,
this is one that you can really learn from. And of course, it has the act one, act two, act three. So we can use those introduction, complication, and then the climax and wrapping up, right? Yep. Those are the three basic parts that we're going to talk about. And there's so much that we could do a 7-hour masterclass, but you're not doing that. I'm not doing that. And there's nobody in the audience wants to sit around for 7 hours. So we're going to give you an overview that'll give you a lot of things to look for when you're watching Jaws.
When you're watching Jaws, but also to apply to your own creative efforts.
Oh, definitely. Because you always want to learn from the masters and then apply.
Yeah.
And what's really cool is that from the very opening notes of Jaws, we have a lesson for writers.
Yep.
Now you hear the dun before you see anything, right? By the way, this whole opening is what you could say is a classic prologue, because none of the primary characters are in this opening sequence.
So
right?
actually,
But it
let's
sets the tone.
right. Let's exactly identify that for those of you again who are aspiring and emerging writers. Maybe you've heard this before, maybe you haven't. But your opening scene, absolutely, your opening scene can help set the tone, mood, atmosphere
Right.
of your film. And this
And
does it, as Chris pointed out, without us meeting any of the main protagonists.
And most scenes, most opening, you'll have a main character, but you can have one that sets the tone, and this is it. People
Right.
on the beach, they're hanging out, they're partying.
That's right.
A lovely,
It's nighttime. It's cool.
lovely young lady decides to run with a guy who might be your boyfriend, might just be, who knows, could be just interesting that
And
night.
he's had a few brewskis, so he's
Yeah,
loose.
this guy he's not gonna be in the Hall of Fame of Romeos. He can't catch up to her. She's stripping her clothes off. That doesn't sober him up. And he winds up dropping onto the shoreline and never gets out there, but she does
Out into the
in
water,
her
swimming beautifully and
all
gracefully
together.
with the moon glistening off the water, right?
Yes.
And it's
And
just her.
we never see
Correct.
clear nudity. Never see that. It's suggested. We never see a shark either, but it's suggested from the first bottom, right? And the credits, it's sweeping through underwater, but then you see that scene, and then you see her under, and it's that point of view of the shark, although we never see the shark. The music does so much heavy lifting in this opening. And for us as writers, we're going to think of that music as mood, right? How can we play or use word choice to set a mood as powerful as those few notes?
May
Because that really sets the tone.
I? Let me also point out, because I'm an advocate of less is more, the quote unquote violence that opens up within that moment, that final moment of that opening scene. It's not gore. It's not over the top. It is actually unseen as well. It's
Yeah.
suggested in the way that the camera deals with this, how that scene was directed. And so the violence that we're seeing, we're not
Right.
seeing all of it, which leaves a lot for your imagination to play
Right.
with. And then the way that scene ends. And we're giving away this, that, and the other, but it's more of a class than anything else. The way that scene ends, you're left with silence.
Yes. Now, you can get a copy of the screenplay online for free. There's just PDFs everywhere. And if you look at the direction there, there's a lot of what on screen suggested. Combine what on the script as a writer with what on the screen, and a great exercise is to try and write that out in prose because it's all action, right? She's thrown this way, she's thrown that way, she screams, God help me, and all that sort of stuff. She's pulled under, all that different stuff, but you never see a circle of blood. You do see it later in the movie. You never see a chewed up appendage that later in the movie. It's all suggested.
So suspend.
And we are terrified and we've seen nothing.
Already. So suspense and the suggestion of the unknown danger or threat and the sort of complete victimizing of this character, this young lady, is all done in a matter of minutes,
Yeah.
short
Yeah.
minute. And
Yeah.
already we're now aware of the tone of the film.
Right.
In the next scene, we're introduced to
Well,
the rest of that world.
let's one last note for this opening sequence. There are no names to those characters.
That's right.
And a lot of people would think then they're not important characters. There's something I want you to think about. If you, not you, the audience, right? If you don't name the character, but something really important happens to that character. That captain, that character becomes the reader, or that character becomes the audience. One of the things that's so terrifying about that opening is that because we don't know who they are and we don't know whether we're rooting for them or against them, she becomes one of the crowd and we're the crowd, you know? So, again, another lesson when you're writing, especially if you're trying to set tone. Who is this person going to be to the reader? Okay.
I want to just, again, for the sake of structure, we're talking acts, act one, act two, act
Yeah.
three. So in act one, as Chris has already identified, we have this opening. So we have our opening scene, which is successful to set tone and mood and atmosphere. Usually revealed in act one is also you're introducing the characters and the world that they exist within, and sometimes a hint of a conflict. Let's see, how does this act one serve?
That sequence, I always consider a prologue. And then you go to the next scene, and there's your main character, safe in bed, completely on land. And it starts with a family humor. You know, when we bought this house, it wasn't the sunlight. We bought it in the winter. I don't know if that makes any logical sense, but it's a funny moment between husband and wife.
In
We
definitely
see,
part of the
you
world.
know, beautiful couple, blah, blah, blah. He's getting ready. The kids are out in the back playing and all that stuff. And it's funny, these little things that the main character's name is Chief Brody, right? And we find out that he's new to this job. He used to be a city cop. Now he's in Amityville, this small town on an island, but he hates the water. She teases her wife, teasing him, but not one. What a weird job for someone who hates the water. And he worries about a lot of things. Don't go on that swing until I fix it. It's dangerous. Little, and it's all these little things. And he gets this call. All right, I'll be there 15 to 20 minutes. And it just sounds like another day.
Yep.
That's a great opening for this character, Chief Brody, who we will eventually come to realize is a fish out of water. That
Literally.
Trope literally fits this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And the writer of the novel, it was Peter Benchley, Carl Gottlieb was the screenwriter that wrote. Benchley wrote a draft, then Gottlieb wrote the second draft, and that became the working draft.
And it was based on Benchley's book.
Novel, Jaws. Yeah. All the little things that we see here in passing about him being a cop, him coming out of bed in his boxers, just regular guy, screams regular guy, just going to work, giving the wife a kiss, saying something to the kids, making faces, off he goes. And as soon as everybody's giving him little complaints, we see how small town this place is. And there's a marching band getting ready. It's not the 4th of July, but it's near. So they're practicing somewhere, and little kids are high karate in the picket fences. But we see, again, one of the great things in writing is if you can get something to function on more than one level. So we have white picket fence. And that is the trope or the cliche of the American dream, to have a nice house with a white picket fence. And then having kids coming around from the karate school, karate chopping them, breaking those little quiet, peaceful life symbolized by the white picket fence is being broken up. The old man are complaining about it. The other people complaining about it. And he's dealing with it. What is the main call here? Did he get called in for karate kids? And then we find they found something on the beach.
Right. And once they find that, we're brought back to recall and the next stage of the terror we saw at the beginning of the
film. Yeah. And we know when we get to the beach, we see Brody talking to the kid who is now sober, right? And he's picking up her clothes. But we know more than Brody does.
Yep.
And then he's like a deputy.
Yep.
It's just so great to have him sitting, crying, gagging.
Because this, he found something.
This cop is not ready for what he found.
Yep.
You know, it's interesting that Brody goes to the crime scene. We don't see what remains of the body, but we know it's ghastly from the deputy. And we get a little hint, like some of the hair, and there's a scorpion or something crawling
they're
on it.
Crabs.
It's
like
a beach.
They're
Crabs,
crawling over the remnants, but the remnants are covered predominantly by seaweed and muck and stuff.
Right.
And it's a bit of a hand.
And yep, just a hint. So again, it is underwritten rather than overwritten.
Right.
The suggestion is far scarier than the graphic detail.
And it's giving you something too. As a writer and as a storyteller, it's giving you the build.
Mm-hmm.
You already had the inciting incident. Now we are on what's called a rising action. There's a thing called a beat sheet that Save the Cat is known to have put out there. Yeah. That's not that kind of
Not
beat.
that kind of beat. I'm sorry,
No,
go ahead.
not that kind of beat. It's the beats in a movie, this the various
Yes.
markers within the movie as you go from start to finish. And if you
Right.
hit those markers, theoretically, you are structuring a strong story. So at
Yeah.
this point, we are in that rising action. We've had an inciting incident. Something has happened that's going
Right.
to change this world we've just been introduced to. And now we're watching it slowly build. And that's what
And
I'm talking about.
I'm willing to bet that we haven't quite reached the 10-minute mark yet.
No, we
Okay,
haven't.
so he sees it, they go and take care of it. He gets the initial report from the, not the undertaker, forensic guy, but it's
Right.
such a small town. This guy,
Foreigner.
the coroner, yes, but he's also, he's like part-time coroner, part-time funeral director, and he might run the choir. He's one of those type of guys,
Yep.
right? And we see him type in shark attack. And he tells it, he goes to the general store, gets paint and brushes and
The sheriff is doing
poster.
this now, right?
Yeah, Brody. Yeah. And he gives it to the deputy. And the deputy has, there's a bunch of kids out. They're taking their swimming test. And he's thinking, shark, I got to get those kids out of there. So he gives this guy, make the posters
Signs,
beach
you can close down the
closed.
beat. Yeah.
And let the secretary do the printing. A little moment of humor. We're going to
Yeah.
talk about how humor works,
Yeah, what's wrong with
right?
me writing it?
Let the
Yeah.
secretary do it, right? Again, it's that moment of humor that kind of dispels the tension. And then there we are, just about the 10-minute mark. He's going on this little ferry, and this big old caddy pulls in, and it's the mayor and this coroner and a couple other people, and that guy from the paper. Every one of these things is like a one-man band. That guy has one other person on the newspaper, and then we get the real conflict.
And now we're
Brody.
this is what's known in and again in the structure as the big debate. What is the scenario that's going on?
Yes.
Because as Chris is about to point out, we have now seen a sampling of the threat. We understand life and death scenario here. We see our sheriff in his normal life. Now that's been disrupted somewhat, and he's trying to
Right.
deal with it. And he's going to do, quote unquote, the intelligent thing.
Right.
And now we introduce this conflict.
Right. It's that twist, right? And that's how the story keeps ratcheting up tension, right? So you get, okay, Brody gets the first problem on the job. He knows what to do, close the beach, take care of the shark, get those kids out of the water. It's very straightforward, and he's not that worried. And then the mayor comes and says, you can't close the beaches on the 4th of July. And now you have complications, right? Now you have, okay, there's a shark in the water, and these guys are the sharks out of the water,
The
right?
town fathers, the town leaders, the people who should be at the forefront of wanting to protect the citizens of the town are caught up in the monetary arrangement of things.
And I said earlier, and this is another great example, what you want when you get a character, a story beat, can it serve more than one purpose, right? So the mayor's saying, you can't close this beach on your own. That's a complication. It would be too easy, and it would be bad storytelling if he was just rubbing his hand and he's a villain. But he makes an argument. And the best of villains have almost the better argument, right? He says, everybody makes their money. We're a summer town. We all make our money on the summer town. If you close it down on our more or less opening weekend, I'm surprised it wasn't Memorial Day, but back in the 70s, maybe the 4th of July was considered more of the start than Memorial Day. I don't know. But if you close it now, you're
Yep.
going to devastate
They'll go
the
elsewhere.
economy.
Yeah,
And
they'll
they'll
go
go
elsewhere if they
everywhere.
want.
Yeah. And
It's
that
not
is.
just that one day, because that's the thing. As you said, it's the beginning of their summer sweep. So literally, it's July and August is when the town makes its living, the major
For the
portion of
whole
fiscal
year.
budget. Yes.
And we'll see that bell rung harder and harder throughout the first act, including when we see Quint, who will explain in a couple of minutes. One of the things he says is, you got to make yourself a decision. You want to ante up and get this shark and save your livelihood, or do you want to be on welfare all winter? That's how high the stakes are. So it's not easy to dismiss these guys. The mayor comes off as a self-serving money grubber. But then if you look at the town, everything is summerish. So then we'll
And
continue
it's an
on.
island.
It's an island. It's a summer island. That's what the economy is based on. And then two, that's exactly why this shark is so dangerous, because they're literally putting more food in the water with each summer tourist, right? Now you start with the moral dilemma for Brody. I just got here. Do I fight him? I see their point now. So he's called for help. He's trying to get some more cops on the beach or more, whatever you want to call them. And he happens to have called the Oceanographic Institute to try and get
He knows
some.
nothing about sharks. He's, but again,
No,
this is guy is,
nothing.
again, as Chris points out, your character does not normally belong in this world. He knows nothing about it. He's a city dude, and that's been his whole life until this point. So he's called for some sort of a qualified information assistant.
Now, we don't get to see that person yet. If I remember correctly, he's home that night, and the kids have this little sailboat by the dock, and they're sitting in it. And Brody is looking at a book about sharks because he has to educate himself.
Pictures too.
And again, remember, if you can get something to perform more than one thing for you, function on more than one level, it's better storytelling. So we get. First sharks we get to see are pictures in a book and paintings in a book. And we see injuries and we see sharks eating boats. Save that one.
Illustrations of, yeah.
And we even see a shark with a metal canister in its mouth. And it just passes by. One of the great things that they do is they do foreshadow really clearly, but every time they foreshadow, especially that canister, it's providing a different function. And in that first glimpse, which is only the turn of a page, we see it just tells us the information it tells us there is this thing will eat anything and nothing will stop it. And then it goes and they distract us by a comedy beat, right? Because Brody has seen the kids and they go, I want to get them out of the water. I want to get them in the water. And his wife, a beautiful, wonderful, charming wife, let them have some fun.
Yeah, he's not
And she
going
gives
out
them a
on the
drink. She
water. He's
says,
tied to the
right. He's tied
dock,
to the
and
dock.
he's
Just
sitting in
relax.
the
And
boat. He's fine.
she's so relaxed about it. And she gives him a drink and she's giving a little bit of massage. And she says, you want to get drunk and fool around? And you think, okay, they're going to relax. And she's flipping through and he's flipping through, and she happens to look, and she sees a shark eating a small boat, and immediately yells at the kids, "Did you hear your father?" And it plays for a comedy, right? But it also reinforces for us how scary a shark is,
How
right?
threatening this scenario can become. Exactly.
And then the next day comes, and again, they use comedy. To put it, it's chaos. Everybody and their mother who has a rowboat is going out to hunt this shark. And all the people are complaining because they are all worried about their bottom line. And then they talk about the 3,000. I feel like I'm missing. Wait a minute. I screwed up, ladies and gentlemen. In my excitement, I have taken the scenes and put them in a blender and hit puree. We luckily have Alex Simmons here. Alex Uberales will just review those scenes in the correct order. So all of you who are at home going, that's not the way, you are correct. And here's Alex.
Okay. Yeah, and to defend my buddy here, he is a passionate lover of this film, and he's so excited about this
So,
opportunity to discuss it. So I
hello,
understand.
Phil.
He just it ran away with him. So
So glad.
bottom line, let's pick it up from when Sheriff Brody has that meeting on the ferry with the mayor, and they're telling him, look, you can't shut everything down because this is where we make our money for the entire year. Right after that scene, the beach is open, and Brody is sitting on the beach, and he's nervous and he's very upset because he's still pretty clear there's a threat out there. But he's watching all these people running through the water and everything. There's a man who's playing fetch with his dog, throwing the stick out there. There's a boy who goes out on a floaty and he's swimming out there. Everything is just wonderful, except for Brody, who's so super tense. And then it happens. There's a movement of some sort of flash. People notice it. They start
Did
panicking.
you see that?
Did you see that? And people start panicking, running in off the shoreline. We get a sense of a floating stick, but no dog. And the owner's calling for his dog, no dog. And then everybody gets out of the sea. People are pulling people out in out of the water. All these children are being pulled out of the water. Everybody makes it back onto the beach. There's a pause. And then this woman comes running out past the pause, past that quiet line of people huddling their children. She's solo, and she's the mother of the boy who'd gone out on the floaty, and she's calling for him, and he's nowhere in sight. And then this floaty, deflated now, drifts in on the tide.
With a big bite out of it.
Big bite out of it, and bloody water all around.
Yeah.
There's that setup.
Yeah,
Now,
floats it.
Brody gets to talk to the town's council, and they have a town meeting, and everybody's all upset. Beach.
Well, the town wants both the shark taken care of and the
Open.
beach is open. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
So let's ask the impossible.
Yeah. So they asked the sheriff, are you going to close down the beaches? And he said, yes,
Yes.
I am.
And the mayor says,
24 hours only. And Brody
I
goes,
didn't agree to that.
exactly.
And
But
that's a
he
classic
stuck with it.
complication.
He stuck with it. He stuck with it. And that's what he takes home that night, is that he stuck with this. He knows there's a threat out there. He's scared that more people are going to die.
And we did meet Quint in that meeting. So you get to see more of that argument. And then the scratch on the blackboard.
Yes.
One of the great introductions of a character.
Nails on a black.
This is thematically perfect for him because Quint, as a human being, is nails on a chalkboard, right? He is arrogant and annoying and rude.
Irascible. Yep.
It's really great when he says hello and then immediately takes a bite of food because, again, he doesn't have manners. Y'all know me. You know what I do for a living. And he explains. You got to catch it. It's gonna ruin your summer. And you're offering what, $3,000? I'll find the fish for 3,000, but I'll catch it and kill it for 10,000. And that's when we get that second beat, the stakes rise up a little more about you got to make a decision. You want to ante up, or you want to go cheap and be on welfare all winter? And they don't give him an answer. They don't want to give him $10,000, which is, again, who are these people? Do you want the business or not? But it's part of the frustration of Brody that takes us through this arc. So he's home.
Brody and his wife, where he's looking through the books and seeing all the shark images and the damage that can be done and people who survived it and chunks and scars and all that. And the whole thing, when she finally sees the picture, backs him up with, child, get out of the boat. Never did this. So she's, again, I don't want to repeat everything that Chris has talked about.
Right.
That
So then,
scene with that family scene with a little bit of humor is played out after the town meeting. All right. And then we go from that
to the
to
two guys, right?
It's night, yes, it's still night, the same night, but on the other side of the island, Mutt and Jeff, two goofy
Right.
fishermen, decide they're going to catch the creature by taking, what was it, the roast?
Yeah, his wife's holiday roast.
She hasn't cooked yet, so it's still
Right.
raw, big hunk of meat,
Big hook in it.
and a big chain, and they attach it to this old wharf, this old little, barely a
Dock, yeah.
sliver of a dock, and they throw it into the water, and they're waiting, and they think this is going to be great, we're going to catch it, we're going to get the $3,000, it's all been great. And something grabs the thing, pulls on a line, the chain tears out the dock. The portion of the dock goes sailing out into the ocean with one of the fishermen on it. He's clawing
Right.
on, trying to hold, and he finally gets adrift and starts swimming back to shore. And his buddy, who's back on the shore,
Right.
notices what?
The piece of dock
Yep.
turns around.
And his.
Again, they were, it's one of those things, it's a great lesson when you're writing and you come to a problem in your story. Work the problem.
Yep, work the problem.
Spielberg's shark, it's his mechanical shark, almost never worked.
Yep.
And it kept forcing him to rethink, how can we have a shark without a shark? And this is a great example where that turnaround, you never see the shark and the addition of the music, right? It creates so much tension. And then the guy who was on what's the remains of the shark of the dock saying, come on, Jimmy, or whatever his name is,
Right.
swim, don't look back, just swim.
And
And
it's
it kind
and
of
that movement underwater is closing in on his buddy who's swimming the best he can, right? He gets to the rim of the dock. He can't quite get up. His buddy reaches down and he's pulling. His feet are still dangling just off the water, just ever so slightly. And you're certain at
Sir,
any
this is
moment.
it. He's gonna get a midnight snack.
But it doesn't. He gets pulled to safety. We don't see the thing. And they're sitting there. Can we go
And
home
the
now? Right.
wharf, the last remains of the bird kind of goes up to the shoreline.
And this is
Can we
again
go home now?
tension, suspense, tension, suspense, humor, tension, suspense, humor
Humor, yeah.
throughout. So it's playing with like a roller coaster ride. It's playing with you emotionally. So then the final scene that I'll just bring us up to where we were is the very next day, Brody, our poor sheriff, our poor beleaguered sheriff, is now gets to the docks, the beach, and there is an army of would-be goofy, wacky, so-called volunteer shark hunters in
Oh
rowboats,
my God.
in
What a
bathing
motley crew,
boats,
right?
in tugboats, whatever they could find that would float, with whatever. And one guy has a stick of several sticks of dynamite.
Other guys throwing firecrackers in the water
Right,
or
right,
M80s,
right.
yeah.
And this is what he has to try and deal with, this melee of nuttiness. So again, humor. And through all of this miasma comes the third member of the Three Musketeers, who are actually by the middle of the film going to go out to deal with this thing. And that's the character of what is his name?
Cooper.
Hooper, played by Richard Dreyfuss. And he's the oceanographer, he's a specialist in sharks, and he has arrived to bring his expertise and his sort of perky young college student-esque of energy to this soup. And that's where we are now.
And I just wanna stop for, I think that kind of gets us to
Back at
launch
the proper
Act
sequence.
Two,
Yep.
but it shows us great introductions. Quint, when all the people were making demands, right, and they thought they were so proper, he was improper with the chalkboard, nails on the
Nails on the
chalkboard,
chalkboard. Yep.
and his quiet demands, right? Here we have town folks and tourists, all just chaos going in, and there's some guy, he's just in jeans and a knit hat and glasses, and he doesn't look like, much of anything, and he's just saying, you guys. This he fix he's resolves one thing. Two boats are trying to get out, and they're in the way. And he says, "Do this, and then do this." And he's okay. He's just a hell of a guy, but and that's a great way to introduce a character. You want someone to like a character, have that character do something for a stranger with nothing for him or herself, and that's what we see about. And then he goes into these guys, and he's laughing at these people because they're gonna capsize their own boat and this and that. And he walks up and he doesn't know who Brody is. He actually asks, hey, could you help me? Do you know where I might be able to find Chief Brody? And Brody, he's up against it with all this craziness. He's like, I'm Chief Brody. And he
Yeah.
says, I'm Bubba Hooper from the Oceanographic Institute. Oh, hi, how you doing? So he's glad to see him. Okay, that's great. We're now we have the team together. But I want to talk for a second about Quint and about Hooper.
Okay, before you do that, just one quick
Yes,
thing.
go ahead.
From the beginning to this point, I just want to underscore that, as Chris has pointed out, and as we've talked about, that it's always been this remarkable, carefully structured or choreographed blend of tension, humor, and establishing the personalities, the very individual personalities of our characters, so that they're fo proper foils for each other. Because even the relationship between the mayor and Chief Brody does in certain ways function as a subordinate to the mayor, but he's clearly a much more rational man. There are ways that you get that he's seeing there's a problem and we have to deal with this problem this way. And I know what I should do, but I guess you're my boss. I guess I'm going to have to listen to you, but I'm not comfortable with it. So you've got Brody, our average man.
Right. Sort he's of our every man.
In this, the every man, the every person caught in this situation of we should be doing this, but we should be doing this, but. Right. And how does he coordinate that? And we see this is his personal struggle. Also holding on to the fact that he also is the fish out of water. Yeah. It's not his world. And here the
he fears water.
Yeah. And the whole threat is the water and right. what's in it.
And we are between the water and what we've seen so far and the music, we fear the water in the audience. Yep. So we relate to Brody in that way. Now, there's a series of great triangles in literature or pop culture, right? Think Kurt, Bones, Spock, right?
Mm-hmm.
But here we have another one in that Brody, fish out of water, chief, the guy who's trying to do the right thing. And then you're going to have the opposites pulling him in both directions, both informing him of what needs to be done. You have Quint, who is self-educated, blue-collar, ornery, a little antisocial, a wild man.
Cantankerous, and have, yeah. And a warrior right, attitude, a warrior personality.
Warrior attitude,
ready to go
face
the thing.
Right? And then yeah. you have Hooper, who is the polar opposite on every one of those things, where Quint is blue collar, Hooper is rich, where Quint is nominally educated, more experienced. He's book educated, collegiate, and that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. where Quint revels in being improper. Hooper tries to be proper, right? He brings the wine. He does this. He looks, could you tell me where I might find? They're going to go at it throughout the rest of the movie in a way that drives the story, that gives us more depth into the history of sharks or the danger of sharks or the wonder of sharks to help enhance the story. But they also are going to be, you can't keep your eyes off them, especially when they're arguing with each other. And it puts Brody right in between them, which drives all three of them and us onto the ocean, onto that small boat, and into Act Two. Gonna need a bigger boat. And by the way, I didn't realize this until I saw something recently. That was an in-joke. Yes, it was improv and all that stuff, but people were saying that they got that crappy boat, that smaller boat, where other bigger ones were available, but they didn't want to spend the money. But you would never see, you would never know that from the movie, because it becomes part of the limitations of all three of them.
I think here's a good place to point out, again, because you've said it a moment ago, but just to underscore it, limitations really fueled a lot of the classical elements that we've come to love of this film.
Oh, yeah. And to go with Robert McKee, great screenwriting teacher, he says the best thing you can do for a character is paint them into a corner. And that boat becomes more and more of a corner. It's small. The stuff on it doesn't really stop the shark. And then through this act two, this kind of, we're cheating here. We gave you a lot of detail on act one. We're skipping like a rock across the water of act two. But Quint's personality and his thick-headedness injure or break down the boat. And Hooper's collegiate knowledge stuff the boat with weapons. Now, Quint is doing it the old-fashioned way and fishing. Don't tell me my thing. I know my business and all that. But we see the anti-shark cage, which Quint makes a joke out of, and we see the air tanks. The only other time we saw the anti-tanks was in that painting in the book. But we see them, and they're just loaded on. It's foreshadowing, but we don't draw attention to it. And then Brody somehow knocks them down and gets admonished by Hooper. You mess around with those.
He pulls a cord that right. has them tied to a certain section of the boat.
Right.
Pulls the wrong cord, and they drop loose.
Right.
And that's when we are told by Hooper. What do you got to be careful? These things could blow us to bits. Little bit of a seasoning for, little setup.
And it's foreshadowing, but again, it's such brilliant foreshadowing. If you take nothing else out of today, appreciate that every time they show us the tanks, it's for a different reason, right? And it's always based on their characters, mm-hmm. right? Self-educating, he sees a picture. It's just, wow, this guy, this sharks, they'll eat anything. And then when Brody pulls the wrong cord, it's because he's a landlubber. It reinforces that he doesn't know what he's doing on this boat. He's a fish out of water. And it allows Hooper to tell us exactly the bit of information we need as an admonishment to Brody, not as a, hey, this is the ending.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
And
brilliant.
Here's another thing that they do with Act Two. And again, we're talking screenplays, and one can say Act One, Act Two, Act Three. You can talk in terms of novels or stage plays with the same terminologies. But also the other thing that happens in Act Two is something I'll also refer to in the beat sheet, which is Save the Cat's beat sheet, mm-hmm. is that all three of our three musketeers, all three of our lead characters in this scenario are suddenly taught the limitations of their knowledge. Mm-hmm. And in a life-threatening circumstance, that's not a good thing.
Yep.
Not a good thing. It's a costly move. In terms of the beat sheet, there's, again, it's just a list that sort of structures how to build a story properly for a screenplay. There's a section that's called A Promise of the Premise, and then the midpoint, and then the triumph of evil. And when I say the triumph of evil, I'm saying, oh, is that the end of the movie?
No.
But there's a section in the film where it looks like, oh my goodness, it's not going
to
work.
And I'd like to talk about the buildup to that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just wanted to set that up.
That's
something that we're dealing with.
We're jumping ahead a little bit, and we're taking less detail on Act Two, but there's so much that you can discover. We've given you enough seeds. I want to talk about the scene in the cabin at night.
Yes.
They're drinking, they're drunk, and it's a comedy scene at first. And it's built on the antagonism of Quint to Hooper and Hooper to Quint.
The old fish educated.
Right. So they're going back and forth, and they start comparing scars. He lost a tooth. He has a broke. He's got a scar here. A shark bit him. Eel bit him. Whatever, back and forth. And there's this great little comedic moment where Brody, the Chief Brody, is watching the two of these things. And then he goes and he pulls up his shirt over here. And the only scar he has is an appendix scar. Again, it's a funny gag, but it reinforces he's a landlubber. He's a fish out of water. He can't compete with these two. And because of that limitation, he's the perfect guy to say to Quint, what's that? And there's a scar, a very subtle little scar on his forearm, Quint's forearm. And before he can answer, again, foils, the beauty of foils, Hooper says to him, wait, don't tell. He says, it's a tattoo. I had it removed. And Hooper says, don't tell me, mother. Right? Now, it works as a joke. It works as a diss on Quint. But what it does do, again, the antagonism of the two of them, I'm going to put this guy in his place. And I'm going to explain what it is to Brody. He says that was the USS Annapolis. And Brody doesn't get it, but Hooper does. And we see the change. He's not making jokes anymore. So you were on the Annapolis? And Brody said, Chief Brody, what was that? You don't know the story. And I'm not going to do it now. But it leads us to the monologue.
Yeah.
It's the only extended monologue in this whole story. It is the last thing before Act Three,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion, anyway. And here again, there was a version of it in the script, but the guy who played Quint was Robert Shaw was an experienced theater person. And he said, I can't say it this way. Let me work on it. And the monologue that you see, that fantastic monologue about the ship that delivered the Hiroshima bomb and was a top secret, and it got hit by a Japanese U-boat, and they all went in the water. And it's one of the bloodiest, most horrific shark feeding frenzies in history. And he gets to tell that story. Now, one, it takes us into, it's like almost Shakespearean. Now there's that comedic scene to set Act Five, where the drunk guards, where the guardians of the gates of hell, blah, blah, right? And then it dips into drama. Here we have one guy telling one story, and it changes the tone. It is a frightening story. It harkens back to the earliest days of man sitting around the fire telling stories, right? It's a ghost story. It's a horror story. And what it does is it sets us up. It gets us in the perfect place that when the shark starts hitting the boat, it's a jump scare for us. One of a couple of jump scares. But we're in now that now the humans aren't attacking the shark. The shark's attacking the humans. And it brings us to a different level of reality. Sharks aren't known to be attacking boats, but this is fantastic tale. And everything from then on is the climax. It's the battle. It's
Act three,
Act three. And now we promised two tricks that happen in Act Three. So
So thank
let's
you for
wrap
sticking
up.
around, right?
Yep, because here it comes. The first one is that they wanted to do a few things. They wanted to have Quint, after that monologue, have to face the shark in a fatal way. But if all three of them were there, Hooper would have known what to do, to pull him, to help him, whatever. So they have the shark tank.
Cage.
Now, I shark cage. I would love to know whether the shark cage, anti-shark cage, sounds almost like Batman 66, but
Yeah, right.
anti-shark case, right? I wonder if that was in the story and in the novel before the cameraman that they hired came up with this footage he happened to have of a shark fighting its way out of being caught in the top of a shark cage. I don't know which came
Which came
first, the
first,
chicken or the egg, but it would be interesting to research that. But what that does plot-wise is it gets rid of Hooper. He's underwater,
In the
he's we see
cage,
it,
shark comes for him.
and then the shark, oh, and all that stuff. And we do see him get in behind like some seaweed. But we don't know if he's the shark goes down and gets him. We don't see him anymore. And then the boat is being attacked and being eaten, literally eaten by this huge, tremendous shark. And he goes in the shark, and there's that horrific ending that he had talked about what happens. And it sets us up for the fish out of water, Brody, still out of water, the last bit of the boat that's still out of the water. And the only way he survives is to go back to what he knows. As ridiculous as it is, there's a point where Quint and Hooper both tell him, "Don't shoot at the shark. You're wasting your time," right? And he's got a gun, and he has to try and keep away from the shark. He has taken that air tank and shoved it in the shark's mouth. And in that moment, we think that's what, he's just trying to get away from the shark. But then he shoots the tank. Sorry, spoiler if you haven't seen this, what is it, 40-year-old movie? But he blows off the shark the old-fashioned way. As a cop, he goes back, boom. And it finishes all the arcs. He has returned to what he knows and has solved the people's problem, the beach's problem, the shark problem, and his fear of water somehow, right? Because he defeated what was scary in the water. And then Dreyfus comes back up and he survives. And I know you love that little ending. So
Yeah.
let's talk about how that thing ends. But it really ties all the foreshadowing, all the fears, all the character
So
moments
what,
into that.
just to clarify, how would you state the trick, quote unquote?
There's two tricks. There's one, we needed to get rid of Dreyfus for a little bit so it could be Mano a Shaco and then Mano a Shaco two, right? Quint goes down with the shark in the way that he hated and he feared the most. And that raises the stakes for Brody. And then Brody, again, the guy who doesn't know anything about anything on the boat, throws the canister into the shark's mouth. But we know that we've seen that in the book, and that Hooper yelled at him, that thing could blow up. And now he takes those things, right? And we also know that he, when he gets the convenient rifle, that was the one thing that didn't go overboard, right?
Yeah, it
And he
was
climbs
so
up on the nest there. Yeah. And smile, you son of a bitch. And he shoots the canister because Hooper told him it would blow up, and he was right. It does. That's a trick. It's the payoff of the foreshadowing. But every time we saw the reference to the canister or the canister itself, it was about some other element. You can't look at that picture, a shark would eat anything. And then you can't just be pulling cords. You're gonna hurt us.
you're
It'll
going to
blow
blow us
up.
up, right? Yeah.
And it's so the audience is allowed to look at where you have to get the canister into the shark without everyone going, oh. So you pick up, that's one of the reasons why Quint's death is so important and why the boat sinking is so important. Brody has not been useful on that boat other than to jump. He really hasn't been successful in any of his attempts until he goes back to what he knows. I'll shoot that thing right out of his mouth.
So one of the ways that one could encapsulate that is, A, once you've written your story and you've built your ending there in that
Right.
first draft or that rough draft, then going back in your rewrites, start to look at where you could set up breadcrumbs along the way that's going to lead to that climactic moment or that
Right.
end point that you want.
It's also called seeding. You go back
Right,
and seed
seeding,
that.
right. And then the other thing too is using your character strengths and weaknesses to set up the proper set of
Right.
circumstances so the scenes feel authentic.
Right.
Now, again, as I think I said earlier, at a certain point in Act Two, all three characters learn how little they know because it's not working. And here
Right.
in Act Three, as we're getting closer and closer to the climax, to the end of the film, the cage doesn't work the way it was supposed to. And Quint, who's the.
And he drops the poison that he was supposed to. He fails. The
Right.
cage fails. Quint fails.
And so, literally, Brody is left with what do I do to survive, to stay alive a few more seconds? And so
Right.
he grabs one thing that's near him enough as this creature is coming for him and jams it. One in real life might grab a chair or some other object to fend
Right.
off an attacker. This is a big metal thing, and this face is right there. I need to. So again, you're going for the organics of the moment, which
Right.
you can better identify once you've set up your story proper,
Yeah.
and can then take the time to go in and piece the things together in a way that we, the audience, will go, oh yeah, that makes sense. Oh, that's fantastic. That's great. Wow.
And
And
it, you
I'll
know.
even point out one more thing quickly. You mentioned when Brody is shooting at the tank, he misses the first three, four times.
Right.
He's shooting the shark. The shark's coming
To
for him. He's hanging off the water, very another foot, and he's in the
Yeah.
water, right?
Right.
But he's firing. I don't know how many shots are left in that rifle because
Right.
Quint has used it before. So
Right.
literally, as these shots are being fired, and he's hitting the fish, but not the tank. He's still in jeopardy as the miles between
Oh,
him
and
and it are closing.
it's really wonderful because we don't know if he's running out of business,
Bullets.
bullets. He's running out of boat,
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The
and the shark is coming closer and closer, you know? So it's just such a great escalation of organic danger and all, you know, it's you're just in the moment. And one of the things that we have seen throughout this is another great foreshadowing is that Brody always works the problem. And what do I have? He's a great improviser. All right, let's get some paint and science and paint signs. All right, we got the politics. Okay, then we'll keep everybody
I
and we'll
need to
have
read. I
we'll
need to
watch the
read up
beach.
on my villain.
And then
I
we'll
need to
read
read.
up. And then he's always trying to, and that pays off. And Quint's fears and his own arrogance pays off. And the resourcefulness
Of who?
of Hooper fails, but he survives. It's
And he
just a
his character,
wonderful.
grows too, because of
Yeah.
that last line in the film. He's
Well, please tell us.
Okay, so the very last line in the film, in the last shot of the film, is almost like the opening in a way, because it's the water, it's the sea. But remember, the boat's gone. But they had these empty barrels, these large barrels that they were using with lines attached to them, ropes attached to them, to anchor the shark. The idea being that because they're buoyant, once they get enough of these things pinned into the shark, wouldn't be able to go under. But this thing was so darn strong, it didn't work.
Right.
But the barrels are left. So in the last shot, they've managed to tie a couple of the barrels together in some sort of a makeshift
There's
floaty,
some
right?
board. Yeah.
Right. And they're on it. The two of them are on it, dog paddling in a way towards the land in the distance. And it's a long shot of them. We're way back. We're watching them heading towards the land. And you hear Brody say, "I used to hate the water." And Hooper goes, "Gee, I wonder why." And he says, "Look, just paddle. Let's just get home."
Just keep paddling, yeah.
Yeah, just keep paddling. So it's a thing of where we are told through that last line of Brody's that you know where I started. Here's where I am now. I've grown from this. And in Hooper, he had a certain sort of confidence built on a number of things, of gadgets and things that he had, and his training. All of that was tested.
And his wealth, yeah.
And as well, all of that was tested. And in the end, all he has is these two barrels and this rope and this board. And I just want to get back on land, you know?
I always also thought it was very satisfying that they had that long shot of the beach while all the credits were rolling. And you can see the two of them, really small, get onto the beach and they're safe. That's pretty cool.
And that, again, to go back to your earlier statement about this film being a great class in story structure, but also in character development, and also in making the best of a bad situation, of learning to work through the challenges. As writers, eventually wrote a novel. So he battled himself and maybe the editors on that. And then the book was out and it did really well. When they wrote the screenplay, okay, again, some challenges there, but when they got to the production end of it, they started running into some new challenges. One of them being the mechanical shark that didn't work 90% of the time, didn't look very convincing a lot of the time. And that could have been the end of it. That could have been, but
Right.
Spielberg figured out a way to work around it. And in doing that, created a much more suspenseful film.
Yeah. It's such a great standing lesson that, working around the obstacles made it a better story.
Yeah,
Made it a
exactly.
much better story.
And even the boat. I didn't know that about the boat until you just said that
Yeah,
earlier.
it's an interesting little bit, right?
Yeah. So
Yeah.
again, here's another challenge where we're not going to get the bigger boat. It's not going to be a nice boat. Okay, all right. So when we work on this little thing, which looked worn and used, and it fit Quint. I think in
Yeah,
terms of casting,
definitely.
they worked well together.
This
That was one. But then the
he would
other.
never be on a boat with a clean paint job.
That too was they both look battle worn and they both died in this battle.
Yeah.
And that's a completion of it's almost like he went to join the other men.
Yeah.
It's horrific the way he goes, but that's it. So I think that again, overcoming challenges, I often say to my students, if you keep jumping from one idea to another, because they have X number of weeks to write a screenplay. Short ones, but nevertheless. And a lot of times certain students will just they'll get 2, 3 weeks into it and they'll go, "Oh, I got a better idea." And they'll want to change the idea. And they keep wanting to change and keep wanting to change because they've run into problems. And I say, if you don't work through a problem, you never learn
Right.
how to, and you never learn that you can. And
Yes.
the both skills that you need.
And this is a great film. Get one of those DVDs or go on to wherever it is and look up the behind the scenes and find out all the difficulties and then watch how organically whole that movie is. It's just wonderful. And it's a combination of music, which for our purposes here, we'll talk about tone and
Right.
setting. For our purposes, a sinking boat and character, fish out of water, Brody, and going with what strengths he knows and what he has learned from the foil characters. It everything so comes together in that improbable moment, it makes the classic movie, and it can also make your story better.
And so you should definitely learn from this and then go tell
Tell
your own.
your damn story. And when you're finished, let us know, and we'll get the popcorn and we'll see
This
how it goes.
was a long one,
Alex, this was
very involved, but hey,
a lot of fun.
there was so much to churn up. Yeah.
Yeah, and we hope, and we didn't. There's so much more to tell. There's so much more to tell, but this should be enough to whet your appetite here in May. It's a perfect time for you to hear this and then say, you know what, I'm going to take another look at that movie and have some fun with it, and
Yep.
then watch it again for the from the writer
Instructional,
shots
yeah, the instructional aspect.
and learn what you can learn. So we hope you had a good time. I always have a good time talking to the legend himself, Alex
Same.
Simmons, and talking about telling the damn story.
Thank you so much, Mr. Christopher.
Always an honor
Ryan,
being your
Ryan, that's what it is.
host.
Yeah, Christopher. No.
That's me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, Chris, it's good. It's good. Thank you so much. And everybody, let us know what you think. Let us know if you have any questions. And Chris, what do you normally say?
I say I'm sorry for screwing up Act One.
Besides that.
I say, despite that, and because Alex saved us, hit that and hit that subscribe.
Yes.
I can watch me screw up again.
No, it's my turn next week. Take care, everybody.
Peace,
Bye-bye.
everybody.